Support comes from Pacific Science Center, celebrating spring at PacSci with butterflies at the Tropical Butterfly House, sea creatures in the saltwater tide pool, and Jane Goodall, Reasons for Hope at the IMAX Theater, a journey around the globe to share good news stories. Learn more at PacSci.org.
This is Soundside. I'm Libby Denkman. If you've looked towards the mountains this month, this will be no surprise. Snowpack in Washington state is low. Some of those peaks are barren, others are sporting a white dusting at their highest elevations. Statewide snowpack levels are an average of 64% of usual as of April 29th, compared to the average of the last 30 years. Some parts of the state are seeing much lower snowpack. The lower Yakima Basin is currently at 40% of normal. And of course, snowpack doesn't just affect your view of the mountains. It impacts farms, fish, dams, and pretty much everything reliant on water in the state. The Washington Department of Ecology declared a drought for much of Washington state this month in preparation for a dry summer. Anna King is a correspondent with Northwest News Network, and she's been going out to farms east of the mountains in Washington to see how they're responding to this drought. And she joins me now. Hi, Anna. Thanks very much for being back.
It's great to be back, Libby.
So we're not that far off of normal rainfall this year. But the real driver of this drought has been warmer temperatures leading to this meager snowpack. How does snowpack impact water supplies in Washington?
Yeah, Libby, snowpack is like our really big reservoir. We depend on it to hold our water until later in the year, and then that cool, fresh water is delivered down springs and streams and rivers to where we need it for fish and for the landscape and farmers and for cities later in the summer for people to drink. And without that reservoir, we're really sunk. I spoke with Caroline Maylor, the statewide drought lead with the State Department of Ecology.
So with a snowpack drought, we see temperature as a big driver in that. That either leads precipitation to come down as rain instead of snow, or leads to what precipitation did come down as snow to melt off too early. And we've already seen an early melt of mid to lower elevation snow. And so we've got this really concerning snowpack that has been a big driver in this drought declaration.
Okay, so snowpack's low, we're well into spring, and we are now officially in a drought for much of the state. What does this drought declaration from the state's Department of Ecology actually do?
A drought declaration can kind of grease the skids, Libby, to help water transfers go quicker through the state processes. And it also puts people on notice, like junior water right holders, that they're going to have to buy some water, cut back in places where they can, and prepare for their water rights to be interrupted. Here's Caroline Maylor again.
We can expedite the processing of water transfers, as well as opening up drought response funding for tribes and public entities like cities, counties, irrigation districts, conservation districts, water utility districts, or water management partnerships. And this funding can be used to address concerns that folks are seeing with in-stream flows or for agriculture or for domestic drinking water.
Okay, so it kind of rallies some more organization and resources around the issue of water access. Let's talk about farmers, Anna. You've covered the agriculture industry for years. What does drought do for a farm? I mean, does it make things more expensive, or can farmers actually face a situation where they would run out of water?
Farms can absolutely run out of water, but they also are trying as hard as they can to pivot and to buy some water, to maybe make some of their crops go fallow so that they can take that water and put it on things that are expensive to lose, like trees or grapes that have infrastructure that could be 10 to 15 to 30 years old, and they don't want to lose those crops. They also might try to like cut back in small ways by becoming more efficient, like using more efficient sprinklers. So for instance, like a fogger mister instead of a sprinkler, being able to use less water, but being able to still do some of the good effects that water can have, like cooling over the top of apple trees.
And droughts are a time when these big questions get asked about our water infrastructure and how it should be operating. What kinds of big solutions are being kicked around in this drought era, Anna?
Some of the junior water right districts are some of the most advanced at saving water because they know what drought looks like and they know how devastating it can be. They pipe a lot of their water instead of running it through open canals, which can have more evaporation and leakage. They use, like I said, foggers instead of sprinklers. They also might use micro drip systems to water crops instead of like real irrigation, where you're just running water down a ditch and letting it absorb into the soil. They also try to irrigate their crops occasionally, like cover crops, like a wheat crop in between hops, or clover or grasses in vineyards, where they keep the soil down and the dust down, but they don't water them as often as they might usually, just enough where they don't die.
And these are increasingly important things to focus on because we are seeing more drought. I mean, in the last decade, the state has declared a drought emergency in 6 of the last 10 years. You visited 2 farming operations, Anna, to learn more about how they are preparing for drought. The first is a dairy operation. And where is this dairy farm? Where are we headed?
This dairy farm is 4 miles east of Sunnyside, and it's surrounded by all kinds of verdant crops. There's grapes, trellised, pear trees, asparagus poking up out of the ground, and a huge green sea of undulating triticale right across the barnyard. The wind was whipping this triticale like the ocean waves. It was so beautiful, Libby, just this green sea of forage for cattle that is just incredible to see. And I met there Jason Sheehan, who tells me that his dairy is already using water very, very efficiently.
Well, for the water that we use, a lot of that's groundwater that's coming out of the ground. And that's a great story in itself because that water gets used 5 to 6 times before it ever gets used to irrigate the crops.
Jason uses water first to cool the milk down in what's called a plate cooler. So that brings the body warm milk down to a refrigerated level almost. And then they pipe that water over to the cows to drink. So the same water that cooled the milk is now being sipped up by cows. And then their urine is put in a treatment system, and then it's used to wash down alleyways and the milk parlor. And then that same water goes to water crops, Libby.
Wow, yeah. I mean, it's multitasking with all that water for many different uses. It's so cool.
All that said, Jason says he still needs more water.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing when we're talking about the droughts with the irrigation water, the first thing that it affects is our ability to grow the crops to feed the cows. So we've already cut our water use probably by at least a third to grow crops. And just becoming more efficient with that water is our goal. But when you get into a drought, you simply need water to grow crops. It's that simple.
And how is Jason Sheehan preparing to keep operations running with less water?
So with less water, he has less water to grow his own crops for his own cows. And so he'll have to pay to bring more offsite hay and grain and forage onto the farm. And he also doesn't have the water to spread the manure or the cow poop on fields out in his own farmland. So he'll have to ship that cow poop away from the farm to other farmers' fields where there is water to spread that manure over crops. And so both ways, he is paying more money. He's paying more money for the food and he's paying more money for the nutrient management, so to speak, of getting that cow poop off and managed so that it's not pollution. And it's going to be an expensive year already, Libby, because farmers are feeling this pinch of inflation, low milk prices, and high feed costs and labor costs. Here's Jason again.
I think, like anything, you've got to keep a clear head and look forward and figure out how you're going to get through tough times. I think that's one thing that everyone at Ag is good at, is figuring out how to get through the tough times. You know, to me, a lot of what years like this enforce is how much we need the integrated plan to go through and how we need to look at additional storage for more water.
Okay, that's Jason Sheehan on his dairy farm in Sunnyside. And now, Anna, we're going to head out from there because you also took a trip to a fruit grower about 8 miles north of Prosser. What does drought look like for that farm?
Libby, it looks like dug-up fields. Jim Willard was pushing out a massive 15-acre field of Pinot Noir grapes. You know, these are big, old, arm-thick vines planted back in 1983. Here's Jim Willard.
Current forecast is the Rosa will have a 62% water supply, 62% of our normal 3-foot or 36-inch water allocation for this ground. So that's going to be about 2 foot of water overall. So I'll take water from this, or less water on this one. I'll have enough water for that block over there and my apples. The apples take, you know, a good 36 inches of water. So you're moving the water budget around around your farm, and hopefully it'll work out some.
Anna, what's the Rosa? What is Jim referring to there?
The Rosa is the Rosa Irrigation District, which is one of the junior water right holders on the Yakima River Basin. And that means basically that they get prorated. When we have a drought year and there's not enough water for salmon and for streams and rivers, that means these irrigators get cut back, Libby. In fact, on Friday, they will probably be cut back and curtailed even more than they are now. So this 62% might move down to something more like 50.
Wow. And how is Jim dealing with that? How is he preparing?
You know, he drove me around his farm. He's got these re-regulating ponds to help capture extra water as it runs through his farm. He has those micro sprinklers that I was talking about. He has drip irrigation, which is when like water runs through this like pencil thin tubing, like black tubing, and then drips precisely right near each plant or each grape or whatever he's trying to water. And so it's very, very precise. And Jim is having to make some really tough decisions. Here he is again.
And that's going to be some of the real challenge as we get into summer. Get into the hotter part of summer, we want to, and see how the water supply really is. Sometimes you just have to say, well, this block, this variety is not going to be as productive, or not going to return as much as this one over here. So you, that one gets stressed while you maintain the higher value crops.
Yeah, I can feel some of the resignation and frustration in Jim's voice as he's trying to manage all of this. Anna, what is it like to be along with him as he's dealing with all of this?
You know, Libby, I was in Jim's big white Chevy pickup, and we passed by this massive pile of torn out vines, more than a story tall. It was all blackened and twisted, and I just asked if we could stop there and take a picture or look at it. And he kind of, for the first time, he just got a bit choked up, and he just simply said no and shook his head and kept driving.
Most people will go through and push the grapes up in the field and dry them out and burn them in the field. And I didn't want to mess with them. I just drug them up here and pushed them up into a pile out of my way. That way I could get back into the field the next day, basically. So,
yeah, but for not having any feelings about this business thing, you got a little choke there. What's going on?
Oh, no, no. I
uh,
That's hard. Those are hard things. Culling the herd's not easy.
Yeah.
It's not even if you have to. It's old Bessie's been around for a while.
So he's really just dealing with the fact that he had to rip out these grapes that have been growing for years and years, and it's hard for him, Anna.
A life of work, Libby. If you could imagine all of your work piled up, all the interviews you've ever done, and just piling them up at the edge of the field or the edge of the farm, that's kind of what he's dealing with. He's just, all of this work, all of this toil, all of this care is just a twisted pile of debris on the side of the farm.
And that's Jim Willard at his farm. It's a fruit growing operation 8 miles north of Prosser. But farmers all over the state are going to be struggling with this drought. It's really just kind of the icing though on a crummy cake, Anna, because there are other factors making the farm business difficult right now. What's been going on?
So many crops are just going down right now. Hops, apples, grapes, hay, grains like wheat and corn. I talked to some grain traders this morning. They said that, the delivered price for corn is $5.40 a bushel. It's down $1 a ton from where it's been at. And, it's just been really tough. St. Michelle, which is one of the largest grape operations in the state and the nation, cut contracts. 30,000 acres are gone. So all of those grapes, or a lot of those grapes, have had to come out of the ground. Hay isn't moving. Apples, there's such a big crop that apples are just a disaster. And then on the other side, the inputs are up. Construction materials, gas, fertilizers, pesticides, tires, tractor parts, labor, interest rates to borrow money. That's all up, Libby. And to add on to the pile, our dollar is incredibly strong against some of our largest trading partners like Korea, Japan, and China. We have too strong of a dollar for their currencies.
Yeah, things are too expensive. It's too expensive for them to buy American goods when the dollar is this strong.
Exactly. And so margins were just really compressed for farmers in 2023. And so they're really looking to heal up in 2024. But I am a little bit skeptical that it could happen just because the climate for farming is so tough right now.
All of this, what farmers are facing, these are things that Anna King is going to be reporting on, and all of us here at KUOW throughout the year as we move more into this dry 2024, what's shaping up to be a dry 2024. Anna King is a correspondent with Northwest News Network. Thank you very much, Anna.
Thanks for having me on, Libby.
Thanks for listening to Soundside. By the way, this show is only possible because listeners support us. If you are able to give right now, check out the show notes for a link to donate. And don't forget, you can listen live on KUOW 94.9 FM Seattle at noon and 8 p.m. Monday through Thursday, or anytime online at KUOW.org.
Hi, it's Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We bring you in-depth, long-form interviews with actors, directors, musicians, authors, journalists, and more. Listen to our Peabody Award-winning Fresh Air podcast from WHYY and NPR.